It is the Tay and Jay Show, 93.5, 95.3, the new Connect FM. I am Lon Tay. He is Jeremy Warner.
Hey.
Spoke a lot about baseball in hour number one. Cardinals fans pretty fired up around here about the game tonight. It's a big one. Cardinals and Astros, and of course the Braves and Phillies from Atlanta. We'll see if we need a playoff game tomorrow. This hour we're going to talk some football, and we are very pleased to have former GM of the Washington Redskins and Houston Texans. He now works with the NFL Network and CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Casserly CBS, and that's Charlie Casserly. Charlie, how are you, sir?
Oh, great to be with you guys.
I appreciate this 100%. And, you know, I wanted to mention something. Mike Ditka comes on our morning show with Stevie J twice a week, Mondays and Fridays. And I thought of you, or I thought of Ditka immediately when I heard that you were going to come on with us, because it was you, Charlie, in 1999 that swindled all of those Saints draft picks from Ditka. How did you do that?
Well, they helped now. They wanted to get Ricky Williams.
Yes, they did.
That was important to them. But from our end, they didn't have a second-round pick. So from where they had to move, we were, I believe, fifth in the draft that year, and fifth or sixth. And they were around 11th or 12th. So without a two, you know, they couldn't really get there. So, you know, my feeling was, okay, if you want to do this, then we want a one and a three the following year, plus all your picks, minus that two. And obviously they wanted to do the deal, and what we were able to do was get the picks, then trade back up and get Champ Bailey with the seventh pick in the draft and hold on to the one for next year, which was crucial in my mind. So, you know, so it was one of those deals that, you know, about every 10 years you have something like that. So we were fortunate to be in that position to do the deal.
I guess the moral of that story, because Mike's an intelligent guy. He comes down here, talks more than football. He talks politics and all that. You just can't fall in love with one player like that, I guess.
Well, no, I think that's probably the case. Yeah. And I think in the Saints' case, and this is just my evaluation, even if Ricky Williams had played his best years with them, which they seem to be in the Dolphins, they still didn't have a quarterback at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think that was their biggest issue.
And Charlie, a lot of us love the draft. I'd love to write a book about it someday, because
awesome.
I just find the whole pageantry of it fascinating and just how much actually goes into this. You were living it as a general manager. How was your war room kind of set up, and was the day stressful, exciting? Just kind of take us into the war room.
Well, really, it's more of a matter-of-fact, business-like approach on the day of the draft, because you've spent a lot of time, especially the last 3 to 4 weeks, fine-tuning your board, getting everybody's opinion in, getting your rankings set up. You're not sitting there for the first time talking about what to do. So you go through a ranking of your board, and you have two boards, one by position, how you have them ranked, you know, best tight ends on down by round. So in other words, here's our first-round quarterbacks, here's our second-round quarterbacks, and you have them ranked, you know, in each round. And then you have an all-position board where you start with who's your best player in the country. And we would rank, we never had to rank more than about 80 guys, sometimes as low as in the 60s. And that could get us sometimes through the entire draft, certainly into the sixth and seventh round. Because everybody's board after the first round really varies.
Sure.
So you had, you'd work off your ranking board of one through, as you go through the draft, and we would go through scenarios going into the draft. So basically, when it came to your pick, your options were what trades do we have available, and you would have people on the phone with other teams,
wow,
talking to them about either moving up or if there's anybody who want our pick so we can move back. So you kind of know what are my options here, and then you had your board rated, and so you know you should take the best player available, and that's how you make the best picks. Sometimes if two guys were really close, you might say, you know what, we can get a guy in the next round. Which one can we get in the next round? Let's gamble. But you'd never gamble on a player you really wanted.
Charlie, I'm right there with you. My fantasy football draft every year, I'm just as nervous. Charlie Casserly.
I'll let that one go. So
there you go.
But go ahead. What's up now?
Charlie Casserly, the NFL Network and CBS Sports. He is the former GM of the Washington Redskins and also the Houston Texans. You know, Charlie, right now we've got such a league that's dominated by quarterbacks. In your mind, is this league as dominated right now by QBs as ever?
Well, I don't know if I can say that historically because, you know, you're asking to compare every year in the NFL. But
sure.
I'll say this. The way offenses are evolving with more and more people throwing out of the shotgun, which almost seems their staple offense, then I think you're getting more on the quarterback in a more wide-open game than ever before. So I think the quarterback, always the most important position, now is probably being utilized more than ever.
Speaking of quarterbacks, the Colts are without theirs. Peyton Manning, they've built this team around the quarterback, and obviously they're going to have a down year. Were they set up for a down year anyway? Because it seems like they kind of looked away from their offense and defensive lines over the last couple years.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I thought they were going to have a heck of a year because they were getting, you know, they have all their receivers back healthy. Dallas Clark would be healthy. They took Costanzo from Boston College. They've inserted him at left tackle, and I know that's a growing process, but he's done a decent job so far. So I thought they actually would be better this year and have a, I don't want to say a bounce back year because they won the division last year, but to be even better. But you're right. I mean, the offensive line is an area that needs work. Their first two draft choices were offensive linemen. I think they're going to continue to improve in that area, but it is an area they have to get better. And they've been built for pass blocking, not for run blocking. So if you lose Manning, you don't replace Peyton Manning. You change what you have to do on offense. And that's awfully hard to do with the way that offensive line is constructed, in my mind. They're better pass blockers than run blockers. So normally what you say is if you've got to go with the backup quarterback, you run the ball more, you eat up time on the clock, you're more conservative, rely upon your defense a little bit more. That's hard for them to do.
Few more minutes with Charlie Castro of the NFL Network and CBS Sports. He's a former general manager of the Washington Redskins and the Houston Texans. You can follow him on Twitter at Casterly CBS. And switching to the Bears, a lot of Bears fans. I'm one of them. I thought this offseason, which it was short and accelerated, of course, they tried to patch a dam with a Band-Aid pretty much on the offensive line. They lost Owen Krutz. They add Chris Spencer. And then at wide receiver, they needed a playmaker. They got Roy Williams, who hadn't been doing too well. And my question is, obviously, you guys know more than us. The GMs know more than us. But it seemed like the Bears kind of just didn't address their needs when everybody knew what they were.
Well, they felt that they had a decent group. But on the other hand, you know, they took Gabe Kareemi in the first round.
Sure.
And I think that's been a solid pick for him. So they felt he would be the right tackle. And they felt good about the other group based on how they played at the end of the year. So, you know, they may have to reevaluate it. Now, one thing Sunday, now they're missing both starters on the right side of the line, and that really hurt them. So you can't dismiss that. And, of course, I think they felt they were going to get Krutz back, and I don't know if that's been a big loss or not, but they felt they were going to get him back, and then, of course, Garza would be the right guard.
Charlie Casserly, he is joining us right now. And, Charlie, I know one thing that you were pretty proud of, because I'm sure a lot of people at the time thought, what's he doing? Mario Williams, you took him when everybody else thought the Texans were going to take Reggie Bush. Or Vince Young. And that is something that has really worked out well for Houston, right?
Well, it has. And he's a great young man. He took a lot of heat, which was undeserved. The heat should have been on me. And I took a lot of heat, too. So
he didn't
get it all. But basically, at the time, we thought that Bush would be a contributing player in the NFL, but not 60 plays a game. We thought he'd be about a 30-play-a-game guy. And the first pick that year was $9 million a year. So at $9 million a year, you got to have a guy that's going to line up and play every snap. And we thought Mario Williams would do that. We thought this guy could go to the Pro Bowl and be one of the better players in the league at his position.
I got to ask you, now with that rookie salary cap, does that change the way you draft number one? I mean, everyone has to usually take a quarterback now or before. Now, I mean, obviously Cam Newton went number one. But does that change that maybe you will take a wide receiver? Maybe you will take a cornerback?
Well, I think, in the case of Bush, I thought one guy was a part-time player, one guy was a full-time
sure.
player. I don't know if it changes. I think you're still going to rank him in a particular order, and I think you should take him still in that order. So I think I don't know if it changes any of your draft strategy. I don't think it would change mine. I think we'd still take the best player. It's fortunate you're not going to be tying as much money up in those players as you did before. That's the good news of it.
Final question for Charlie Casserly, former GM of the Redskins and Texans. Now he works with the NFL Network and CBS Sports. And that's my question, Charlie. What is the difference? And I assume you're a lot less stressed now when you work on the TV side of things and the media side of things as opposed to the GM side of things. Talk about that a little bit and how you enjoy doing that now.
Well, I think the difference is you do have a little bit more free time to spend with your family, which is good. I think you still put the same effort and preparation into what you do because you want to do a good job at what you're doing. But you do have a little more time to spend with your family, which is good. And, of course, the other job, you're on call 365 days
sure.
a year, 24 hours a day. That's the nature of the position. But I love doing it. I enjoyed it. I never thought it was stressful. I thought the job was fun.
So does that mean that you guys like John Gruden and Tony Dungy and your buddy Bill Cowher up there, are they more likely to stay what they're doing just because it's a little less stressful?
Say that again now?
The coaches that are out
right.
there, there's Tony Dungy, Bill Cowher, they're kind of doing this TV thing. Do they get back into that just because of that competitiveness? Do you think they'll finally get back into coaching someday?
Well, I can't speak for each one of them,
sure.
but the competitive part of it's there. My feeling is when they get out of it, I think what they are, they're more selective about where they go back in because they realize it's hard to win in the league, and if you're in a situation where you don't have a chance to win because either you don't have a chance of getting a quarterback or have a quarterback or ownership isn't committed, I think they pass those things over. Each one of the guys you mentioned won a Super Bowl.
Yep.
They know what it takes to win a Super Bowl. I don't think any of them are going to go back in and start with a team that has no chance to win for a number of years. I think they want to go into a spot where they could feel they could win rather quickly because they know the effort it takes.
Well, Charlie, I know every time you're on the NFL Network or CBS Sports, my ear is tuned to the TV. You do a great job, and we can't thank you enough for joining us today here on the Tay and Jay Show. Thank you, sir.
No, great to be with you, and we'll do it again sometime.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie. We appreciate that. And a good buddy of mine, John Wagner here in Champaign, helped set that up. And it was funny.
Yeah,
I know.
Lon with the.
This was funny
setting
because.
Up this, the producing.
This blew your mind, right?
Yeah, I was like, huh?
It was during the. Or at the Western Michigan Illinois game. And I run into John, and he says, hey, I like listening to your show. You and Jeremy do a good job. I'm like, I appreciate that, you know. And I always try to ask people, I'm always like, you know, if there's anything different you would do, if there's anything you like, you know, let us know. We want to know that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at me, he's like, well, would you want to interview Charlie Casserly? And I'm like,
no.
I don't know if we can slide him on. I'm like, what? So he set it up. So we got to thank John, give props out to him, because that's great, man.
He didn't touch on your fantasy football question.
No,
though.
He didn't. I don't think I impressed him with that.
Well, he's probably sitting there like, you guys think you can do what I can do. Or what I did, you know, with the Redskins and the Texans.
You know, it's funny because
we're playing GM.
Right. I think a lot of our listeners and a lot of the area coaches, even the Illini coaches, they know I'm just goofy.
Yeah.
So they expect that kind of a stupid question from me. But Charlie was kind of like, what?
some good stuff, though.
Yes.
I meant it when I said I would love to write a book someday about the NFL draft. I don't know what it is about the NFL draft, but I love
it. Awesome.
The pageantry. And just I think that there's hope. For every team. Every team has some hope. And I love those war room shots. And I'd love to see somebody do a documentary where they do that.
I would pay money to watch that.
And even if it's 3 years later, because you don't want them to see the current stats or the current staff doing their thing. If it's like 4 or 5 years later they have that, I would love to get inside the war room someday.
The one question I've always had, and I wanted to ask Charlie, but he was kind enough to join us for a while there, is when you know that a team is going to take this player, you know that they're going to take this player, like this year, let's say Carolina and Cam Newton. Why does it take 10 minutes?
They didn't do that, though, this year.
No, they didn't, actually.
It changed
this
a little bit.
This year it went bam, bam, bam.
That's the one thing I loved about this primetime thing.
I totally agree.
Is that it's quick. It's real. With the first round, went like 3 or 4 hours this year. At one point, it was going 7, 8 hours for the first round. So that's one thing I've actually liked. You know, Cam Newton was picked within 2 minutes this year. But yeah, it used to be they'd take 15 minutes. Because you know, you might as well. I mean, they're not worried about the TV and you guys watching out there.
Exactly.
They're worried about their team. They're waiting for that extra trade offer to come in.
Well, and two things. You just said it. Like Charlie said, there's somebody on the phone always talking with about trading up or down. And number two, why not get a little extra TV time for your team?
That's right.
I mean, for a guy like me that's an Arizona Cardinal fan, and I know they've experienced some success in the last 5 years, but back in the day when we were terrible and always drafted in the top five, that was like my fun was draft day because I got to hear about the Cardinals for 10 minutes.
And I think everybody feels that way because yes. I'm the same way. I'm a Bears fan. Chicago market, and you feel like they never talk about the
right,
Bears.
Right.
They're always talking about the Eagles or they're talking about some awful team that picked in the top of the draft.
Like the Cardinals.
Or they're talking about the Patriots all the time. So you're
exactly.
sitting there like, oh, finally I get to hear about my team. And yeah, sometimes they talk about you for 2 minutes and move on.
Yeah. Or
even if it's your pick.
Or you know that your team is next. And they go to a commercial,
yeah.
which you know is going to eat into their time talking about your team. I'm like, how come they've got to take a commercial every time the Cardinals select?
Speaking of that,
yes,
you know, I'm unbiased in this thing, but you know, you turn on the radio, you turn on the TV, and everyone's talking about the Boston Red Sox and the Tampa Rays and that chase. It seems like they're putting way more attention to that one than the St. Louis Cardinals, Atlanta Braves. And I think that's interesting. Because there's two huge, those are two huge teams.
Big time.
The Braves and the Cardinals. I mean, we talk about baseball fandoms.
Yeah.
I mean, when you talk about area, Atlanta Braves are as big as the St. Louis Cardinals when you talk about pure
yes.
area.
Yes.
And when you talk about two of the teams that spend the most money in the Major League Baseball.
Well, something happened today, and I texted you about this, and I'll talk about it next because it goes right to that point. We'll do it next. Tay and Jay Show, 93.5, 95.3.
Connect FM.